everyone. Welcome to .NET. Bertrand's letting me host today. Everyone be scared. Anyway, I'm Kendra Havens. I occasionally work the show, but now I'm hosting. Guys, obviously this is Scott Hanselman. You
Hello.
Already know who he is.
Hello.
This is Casey Uhlenhout. Yes. Uhlenhout. I nailed it.
Is it hoot
Sorry.
Or hoot?
Hoot. You guys should see how it's spelled.
Your name is
Uhlenhout. Sorry, I'm not holding it against you. The TH.
All right.
Okay. And I have been saying that wrong for a long time.
Is it? Anyway, and our fantastic guests, we have Maria Nagaga.
Yay!
And Donovan Brown.
Yay! Cool.
All right, today we're going to talk about speaking and connecting and the network of .NET.
So the idea that Bertrand had and what he wanted us to come on, and he said I should kind of like facilitate.
Yeah.
Is that all of us have varying levels of public speaking, right? Everyone here and on the remotes has varying levels of public speaking, and like you're getting started.
Yes.
You've done some great videos that are very well received.
Yeah.
And you're interested in getting involved more and getting on stage.
Yeah.
You speak all the time. You've done keynotes, Casey.
Yep.
You've done demos, big stuff. Donovan basically dropped in like Mission Impossible onto Scott Guthrie stage, and he's now like he's the guy that they call when you need somebody to fix it. You bring him in, and it's awesome. Maria, you speak at universities and colleges, and are starting to do the conference circuit, and you've spoken at OSCON and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have kind of a diverse background of experience because I started out at a community college. Did classes of 15, 20, 30 people, and then worked my way up to the big stages. So we thought it would be interesting to explore how each of us got started and mm-hmm. maybe see if we can use that as an on-ramp to how you, the audience, can get started. Does that seem like a good idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
So actually, why don't we start with you? Is that okay?
Sure. So I guess I first got it started speaking at college. So I was like president of a club or something. So I always had to intro things. So you'd get in front of like crowds of people and be like, oh, this is what we're doing today. Thanks for coming out. So from being a host, then when I got to Microsoft, it was a pretty easy transition to moving on the stage and doing things. The thing that was probably difficult for me was I was doing very technical talks, so you have to like type code and speak at the same time, which is a little intimidating, but that's where practice comes in. I'm sure Donovan will give you his spiel on how much you should practice, and definitely listen to that. But that's pretty much how I got into it. I was lucky I started at Microsoft, which we have internal conferences, which are pretty low-key and low-pressure, so that was like an easy on-ramp. And then when I got invited to keynotes and bigger external conferences, I was comfortable speaking in front of people. So that's how I got started.
Cool. I'm going to remember all these different things that you mentioned, and I want to dig back into each one because I think we have follow-up questions that will then empower people who are watching to get involved in speaking as well.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of speaking have you done?
Oh, I guess my first few, I was kind of in theater growing up as a kid, so I got kind of used to it, but then I stopped for a while, and then now I'm back. So I guess I started on my internships. It was during like one of the showcases or something, so no big deal. 40 guys in a room who've been programming longer than you've been alive, presenting whatever you worked on that summer to them. But it is really fun. It's like an adrenaline rush a little bit, I guess. So when I started full time, I started making videos and it was good. And people are like, you should go on stage soon. So I have that to, freak out about.
That's good. And well, now you're hosting on .NET.
Yeah.
Maria.
I've been public speaking, for probably about 20 years, which makes
casual.
Since she was one.
Two. Because I'm a chirp right now, but I'm a really good public speaker. So I've been speaking to different audiences since I started at Microsoft, from developers been programming much longer than I've been doing, to like students, and I think that's what's really helped me kind of improve my skills is that I've been transitioning between different audiences because I can learn what different people need to understand. So I want to be able to relate to developers who have more skills than I do, but I also want to inspire people who don't know how to code yet or just learning how to code as well.
Yeah, we'll have to dig into that because this idea of of culture where you're speaking isn't just the country or the language, but it's like, am I talking to a room full of old engineers? Or am I talking to a room of 7-year-olds?
Yep. Gotta adjust for your audience.
And all the things in between. But adjusting for your audience can be the language they speak, where they come from, how they grew up, all those kinds of things. Donovan.
I got started when I was on a Skype chat with Brian Keller, and he was helping me with a problem for release management. And when I tried to describe to him what I was trying to do with it, he realized that, okay, this guy's doing stuff with this tool that no one is trying to do yet. And he offered me to speak at TechEd 2014. It was the last TechEd we had in Houston. Yeah, so when you were talking about where did you get started, I literally got dropped into the largest tech conference in the world at the time and said, go speak there for your first attempt. And I was so jazzed up and so excited that I built this monster crazy demo that should have never have worked ever. And they erupted into applause 3 times during the demo because they're just like, I can't believe this guy is getting this to work on tape. And that started everything. And from then on, I've been following you and Scott Guthrie and all everyone else around.
That's really interesting. So that's a very different perspective, and this shows that there's different entrees into this. Kendra, you're doing small groups, brown bags, and videos that you get to edit, right? You can watch the video and you say, I didn't really like that.
I'm like, words, and I can just take that out. It's great.
How many times did you edit your Visual Studio Code video?
How many takes?
Like, did you go like, oh, this sucks,
gosh.
Or did you just do it once?
I did not just do it once. well, I was still really new to the technology then, too, so I wasn't really sure how to phrase anything, and I had to run it by Dustin
Ballpark.
Campbell.
How many times did you run through
it? Oh, shoot.
6,
I don't
10?
Know. Well, all of the takes, I changed the wording a lot, so probably at least 10, 15.
So this is really important. One of the things that I think people don't realize when they see us get on stage and just kind of like start running is they think we did it just, that was the first time we ever got up there, right? Yeah. And I you just said.
You guys practice? I thought it was just me.
It's really important to point that out. You did it 10 times. Donovan, I know, is an obsessive practicer because he wants to have everything go wrong before he gets on stage, so that when it does go wrong, he knows how to solve that problem. Huh. How many
times? It's weird. I just got a promotion, and I practiced my intro so much that I'm having trouble not saying senior anymore because I rehearsed it so often that I literally I'm almost autopilot when I'm on stage because I've practiced every phrase that I want to say. So now when I say, hi, I'm Donovan Brown, senior, and then I have to pause and like, oh, crap. Okay, I got to go back and practice. So I'm literally practicing saying my name correctly so that I can say it perfectly when I get on stage. It's weird. I obsess over making sure that I've rehearsed it so many times. By the time you see it on stage, I've done that 20 or 30 times before I ever step on stage.
Random pro tip is when you're saying your own name is actually really important, especially when you have like a crazy last name like mine. So I used to just say my name like Casey Ulenhoot, and then no one can parse what you just said. Where does the first name end and the last name begin? And so one of the best things I learned was to literally pause between your first and second name. So it's, hi, I'm Casey Ulenhoot. And then people can actually figure out, oh, that's two names, not one. Like, one's clearly a last name. Someone told me to pause between them because they couldn't tell, and that's changed things, like, immensely. So pro tip.
Actually, in the pro tip area of pausing, let's talk about pauses for a second.
Yeah, sure.
I think that one of the things people do when they sit down, like we are right now, and extemporaneously speak, is they fill the space. And the space between words and sentences can be filled with either pauses.
Yep. Or ums.
Or ums.
Yeah. Right.
Or A's.
Do you have something about that, Maria?
I did public speaking at university, so it was a requirement for every single computer science or engineering student who went to our college because we were really bad at interviews, so they made us do public speaking. And we would get a point deducted for every single time you said, or like.
Oh, like is a killer. Oh I say like all the time.
My friend Stacy said she hates hearing me speak because I never say or like. I'll just pause.
So it was beaten out of you early in college.
Yeah, early age. Even with my parents, they're like, why?
So that is...
is a weird one for me, too. I was having a really bad rehearsal once, and they were telling me a story that my fiance backstage freaked out because I said, she's like, oh my God, he's panicking. What's going on? That's not right. He never says, what's going on? And I got backstage and she's looking at me like, what's all right? I'm sorry. It was just weird. I had something go wrong. But she knew that I heard him say, oh my God, something is wrong, because he never said that.
Oh, no.
That was crazy.
Oh, man.
The most important thing to realize about this is self-consciousness is different. Like, being self-conscious has a sense of paranoia, right? But being conscious of what your self is doing is different, right?
Yep.
For example, I was just going to say so. So is a lazy way to fit two sentences together. Yep. And Microsoft speakers tend to use that a lot as a, well, so, and we'll, and we'll, but, and we'll also.
Hence. I say basically a lot. Basically, as my pause as I'm connecting the next sentence. Like, all the time. Dustin and Mads, they all call me out on it. And it's like, dang it, I did it again.
Then realizing that so or actually is one of your ums.
Right.
Is important. So do you all think that, see, I just said so again. Do you think that pausing is a reasonable thing to replace your ums? Like, I think we're all afraid.
Absolutely.
That we,
Absolutely.
I think if we pause. I think we feel if we pause that everyone is going to think that we've frozen up.
Yeah, I don't think that, and I also use it to punch a statement. Sometimes I want to let it sit. I want to let it simmer. I want to make sure you got that before I go and blow your mind again. So I want to pause and kind of let it sit, like let that sink in, and then I'm going to keep going. Mm-hmm. And it's really important. I've noticed I just did a tour of Europe. I was in Europe speaking for a month, and I have to speak much slower there. And it was interesting because it almost felt better. And I was conscious about speaking slowly because I wanted them to understand, and English is not their first language. And it almost felt like it was more powerful and what I was saying had more significance because I wasn't rushing through it really fast like I would in a normal conversation. I've been bringing that back to the States with me as well.
That's a really interesting thing. I'm sure that there are Europeans watching, though, who are like offended because you implied that Europeans don't speak English. But I think that what people don't realize is that English and colloquial American is a totally different thing. And if we really started talking really fast like this, basically started seeing something like, know what I'm saying? Like,
I get called out on that all the time, being like a Southern girl. It's like, no one can understand your drawl, especially people who are not.
People
like,
think they speak English. Yeah. No, you don't speak English.
Yeah, I like to think I speak English, but not really. So, I get told to slow it down, enunciate, finish your sentence. Not everyone speaks hillbilly. It's like, well, I always should.
I always use the example of know what I'm saying.
Yeah, know what I'm saying?
Know what I'm saying? Do you know what I am saying? Know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. People say, are you doing something tonight? And we say, are you doing something tonight?
Are you doing something tonight? Yeah.
And people are like, what?
How would you even transcribe that? Just go dot, 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 gibberish.
That's what it is.
Have you
I think as a person who has a bit of an accent, I always tend to speak a little bit slower because I have this expectation of that people naturally will question, like, where is she from or what is she saying? So I've been taught from a very young age, because I grew up in multiple countries, that I just naturally will pause when in between conversations. But also I write a script, and I know people find that really strange. Some people say it's an overkill, but I always write a script.
I write a script.
Yay!
Yeah.
And my scripts do kind of, they do account for pauses, and they do account for punchlines. And the worst part is that when you're expecting someone to laugh and they don't, and nobody laughs at my jokes because I'm not American and they don't understand my jokes. Because I'll make Doctor Who references and people will be like, and those are other things that we don't think about when we're doing public speaking, is like the cultural references that we try to put in. So when people make football or soccer analogies, I don't get them. I mean, like, I'm just like,
aren't you required to by like your birth? I mean, I understand why I don't know sports ball, but
I don't know sports in general. Like, people have tried explaining American football to me several times, and I'm just like. And I have a cousin who plays for the Giants, and still I'm just like.
So let's talk about preparation. So you said that you write out a full script and have that available. You may not necessarily use every word, but that script is available. Kendra, you said you have a script as well.
Totally. And I'm like cracking myself up as I write it. I'm like, I'm so funny. It's terrible.
Donovan, or actually Casey, do you have a script?
I do not have a script, but the first thing I do is try to figure out like the arc. It was Phil Hack actually told me this. He said,
Phil Hack got that like, for me.
Oh, well, there you have it. What goes around comes around. Exactly. So, yeah, I figure out what the story arc of what the like, general goal is that I'm trying to accomplish, like how everything's going to fit together, because I usually have like a really ambiguous title like C-sharp development in Visual Studio, and that could be anything. So I have to figure out what kind of story I'm going to tell so I can piece everything I want to show together. And then I basically just outline everything that I need to say, like or like all the features I need to show, and like, I put them in the order.
Is this bullet points?
Yeah, essentially. And then if there's
I don't write anything down. And when I'm getting ready for, and Scott, you know this too, when you're getting ready for a keynote, when you're presenting someone else's product, they want to give you that script. And I sigh every time. I'm like, guys, stop wasting your time. There's no way I'm reading a single word of this on stage. I was like, what you need to do for me is make me get your product, make me excited about it so that I can then apply my own learnings, my own experiences to it. So I think the biggest praise I got recently was at Connect, where I told the story about the fear setting in. That's real. That's literally happened to every developer who's been introduced to a new piece of technology. And I felt that Stephen at first was getting frustrated with me because I wouldn't just take his words. I said, no, explain this to me. Make me understand why this is cool. So that I can get on stage and share that excitement with everyone and not just read your words, because I'm not there to read your words. I'm there to tell a story. I'm there to make people passionate and excited about this. And if you want someone to read a script, go get someone else to read it. You want Donovan on top of this technology. So tell me what makes it cool. And as Casey just pointed out, what do you want me to make sure that I say? Like, what's really important that I hit on you? And then what I do is I create the story that takes me through the path that dots all the I's and crosses all the T's. I don't write a script. I have this weird routine, a little too personal, but in the shower, I go over the entire thing, like word for word, and over and over and over again, but I never write it down. But what you get on stage is what I'm feeling at that very moment. Because sometimes it's always, some of the stuff just happens and it's hilarious and it goes viral on Twitter, but it scripted some of that stuff. It just had to happen when I was on stage.
So what I think the takeaway here for people that are watching who are thinking about getting into speaking is that one size doesn't fit all, but mm-hmm. each of the people on the stage and on the Skype call have figured out or are in the process of figuring out what works for them, yep. right? You know, Maria writes it down. Kendra writes it down. You have bullet points, a story arc. Donovan needs to feel it kind of viscerally in his chest, and then he'll know that it'll be okay. Mm-hmm. I started by writing it out, and now I do a story arc. And let's talk about a little bit the story arc, right?
Sure.
The story arc idea is that there's, just like when you were doing eighth grade English essays, right?
Yep.
Beginning, middle, and an end, you basically say, here's what we're going to do, say what you're going to do, do it, and then say what you did. But you have to go and have this bell curve of building excitement, the crescendo demo, and then right. the let's all review what we just did. Mm-hmm. Is that what you do?
Yes. And then, so for example, what was slightly different is when I did the keynote that I did in Connect, my story arc had to change because I needed to end on something more powerful, they said. Whereas before, when you give like an hour-long talk as opposed to a seven-minute talk, you can kind of just recap what you did, explain why it was important, and then like open to questions. But when you have 7 minutes, so if you're giving like a lightning talk or a keynote, you have to like end on something big because that's probably all they're going to remember in that five-minute segment to begin with. So in that case, I had my story arc where I built to a crescendo, but then I needed to even end on something even higher than the excitement that I was building. So rather than being an arc, it was more like a upward trajectory. So that was, I mean, it's slightly different.
The people who are up here, you know me pretty well. Do you think that I have notes, or do you think I just go up and do it? Just out of curiosity.
Well, I know.
I think you just do it.
No, he has his little black book.
So Casey knows my little secret.
Notes. I've never seen you refer to notes. I don't like people who have the crumb trail on stage. I've never seen you do that, but I'd have to believe that you rehearse before you get up there.
So I do rehearse, but I also have a book. I have a little Moleskine. I've got two of them. I've got a large one, and then I've got a tiny pocket one. Mm-hmm. And if you'll notice, when I do keynotes or I do, you know, an Ignite or Connect or whatever, I bring it out low to my arm. I put it between the keyboard and the monitor.
Sneaky.
Always. And I've decided that I do it unapologetically.
Yeah.
Huh. The reason that I do it is that the story arc is important, and there's six or seven bullets.
Yep.
And in the excitement of it all, something as simple as applause or a hiccup on the app mm-hmm. can throw me off. And then I would skip bullet number four.
Right.
And then I'll beat myself up. So after years of getting off stage and beating myself up and going, I forgot number four. Oh, I forgot number six. Oh, number two.
Yep.
I just have it there. And even if I don't look at it or refer to it, like Donovan said, he doesn't see me refer to it. Mm-hmm. But knowing that it's there makes me okay.
Right.
When I used to
like
do,
a safety blanket?
It is a safety blanket. When I used to do stand-up comedy and open mics and stuff. And what I would do is I would take 8.5, 11 sheets of paper and I put them down on the ground. Mm-hmm. With the bullet, big font, like 30-point font. You can do this,
right.
Too.
Oh, smart.
So just you gently glance at the ground, uh-huh. As opposed to refer uncomfortably to your thing.
Right.
Just to make sure, did you tell the joke about the DevOps or whatever? Did you rub a little DevOps on it? Did you do that?
Right.
Just so you don't forget.
Yeah.
And the point is that it works for me. Most of you don't notice it. But that's what I found. So I'm going to do it without feeling bad about myself. And this is really important for you to understand that find the way that works for you and do it unapologetically.
Yeah, that's interesting because I've seen people train wreck on that because they don't do it like you do. They literally have almost the entire thing. And then you see them like, I got lost. Where am I? And that just makes me sick to my stomach. I'm like, why am I watching you do this? I could have read your script, right? I mean, just give me the notes in your PowerPoint. I'll do it myself. So when I go on stage, I go on and I want you to have my undivided attention the way that I presented it. Like I said, you're so polished that I never knew you did that. So you're at a completely different level of using notes. But I want to go up there and think I don't need any notes. I've rehearsed this so many times. It's just going to work. And the one thing I want to go back on real quick is about writing it down. The only exception to writing a script is when I actually record a video. There, I write down every single word of the video. I record the video first and I don't try to talk during the video. So when I'm typing, I'm only focused on typing. I'm only focused on clicking so that the video is perfect. And then I go back in and I narrate over it. And that way I'm only focused on one thing at a time. And you if you look at any of my videos, I never backspace. I never make a mistake because it's perfect. And then I go and I focus. And I literally read the script. And then I go back and I time and adjust the time of the video to make sure that my words now match the video. But for a 10-minute video, that's probably 2.5 hours of my time.
Kendra is over here nodding vigorously.
Yep,
that's exactly what you do.
That's precisely what I do.
So this is interesting. So here's a juxtaposition between Donovan, the video maker, versus Donovan, the onstage speaker. One of them has a script, one of them doesn't. Mm-hmm. I thought at the beginning when he was saying how vigorously he doesn't use a script, it was like, I'll never be at that level. Right? But now he's telling us that he does. So this is an important thing to point out, that he's utilizing various tools for various things to accomplish his particular goal.
Yeah.
Do you all think that if you speak too much, then you won't be a developer anymore? Like, I know that some people who may be watching, they maybe made it a half an hour into this, and like, okay, here's a bunch of professional speakers, blah, 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 right? This is stupid. You all did theater in school. Well, I'm a developer.
I did not do theater in school.
No, you didn't?
Yeah, neither
no.
did I.
I was Wolf 7 in Jungle Book. I had one line. So, no. Drama was not for me.
That's an interesting question. So who did theater? I did theater. You did theater. No theater?
I didn't do theater.
Okay, so two out of five. Cool. That's cool. So it's not required to do that.
No,
have any of you done Toastmasters?
No.
Do you know what Toastmasters is?
I do know what it is, but I've never done it.
I've never done it.
So a lot of people will say, well, I'm a developer. Maybe I'm introverted. I don't want to go out there. I'm an INTP. It's not for me. Right? You know? You may know your Myers-Briggs. There's a thing called Toastmasters. You can go and Google it with Bing, and you'll find there are Toastmasters. It's like Alcoholics Anonymous for public speaking.
Yep.
You go in a safe place, and you get over your fear of speaking. And if you're serious about, you know, starting to present on technology, I would really recommend it to people. You don't talk about tech. You talk about your day.
Whatever. Yeah.
But it talks about how do you carry yourself? You know, where do you put your hands? Do you have stuff in your pockets? You know,
right.
How do you not say 15 times? In a safe place of small groups, 20, 30 people. And then you graduate when you give a presentation to everyone. So if you have paralyzing fear of giving presentations, Toastmasters is a really great way to do that. If you're a little more advanced, has anyone done comedy sports?
Oh, I love comedy sports. I watch comedy sports. I do not participate in comedy sports.
Right, so comedy sports with a Z at the end is like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yep.
Right, so they'll put a bunch of people on stage, kind of like this.
And they're on teams.
And they're on teams, right. And then they'll say, all right, we're going to play VCR, where, okay, you know, you're a fry cook, and you're a mean waiter, and go. And then we just act the scene out, and then I pause it, and I back up, and we do it again. That was your fry cook impression? That was lovely. Yeah, I could see
the story arc
right there. It's beautiful. So that gets you thinking on your feet.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And you had said that you had to learn how to type and speak at the same time. That seems to be the number one thing I see people have trouble with. They freeze up, start typing.
Right.
How did you work past that?
I practiced a lot. I basically make it so I don't even realize what I'm typing anymore as I'm speaking. Or the other way around, I don't realize what I'm saying as I'm speaking because I've practiced it so much. Or you kind of like learn where the pauses are, where you can like keep typing and like pause for effect, and so it like works out. So you just kind of like, when you practice it so many times, you figure out where you can have pauses to keep typing and where not, and you also learn where you're typing too long, so you should have a code snippet instead that you just like throw in there rather than make them watch you type for like 3 minutes.
That, the point you just made was that recognizing when it's slow and doing something about it. I think we've all had that experience where you were doing a demo and you're like, I think this is lagging.
Code snippet. Yeah. What happened at Connect?
What happened there?
With when my demo failed?
Yeah, so talk about that. Talk about failure.
Yeah, so there you are at Connect. All you have is 5 minutes to present all this stuff. And one of my demos failed. And I was just on stage and I was like, let's give it a bit of time. And then being able to actually, this is the difference between knowing what you're presenting and being handed something to present. If you know what you're presenting, I just switched to a different demo and I was like, there are so many cool things with Visual Studio 2017 and CS4. I'm going to show you something else. And like being able to quickly think about things like that is very important. And I tell people when you're presenting, it's always important to present on things that you know and people sense the passion in your voice. So I remember the first time I did the Connect demo, I was with Glenn. And was talking about, look, CS Proge is so much smaller now. And he was like, do you understand where we came from? And I was like, no. But once he gave me that context of how it was in the past, I could feel it. And the audience did pick up on it because it ended up getting more applause than Google joining the .NET Foundation, right? So, and a lot of people were tweeting about it as well. So being able to understand what you're presenting is very important. And I think anyone who's looking into presenting, even if you haven't done improv or you think you're an introvert, because I'm an introvert. Most people don't think I am, but I am an introvert. But presenting on things that you know is what gets you into being more comfortable. So I wouldn't say, I've never done Xamarin, for example, and someone hands me a deck and expects me to just go and present it. That's going to be difficult. But if I have a deep passion about .NET command line tools, I can go and present on that because I understand what I'm talking about. So that's also really important. Present on what you know. That's a really good starting point.
Right. You don't have to know everything, though.
Yeah, you don't need to know anything.
You can use it as a forcing function to learn more about something you're interested in. So, for example, like I did a Roslyn analyzer talk. I had never written one before. And so I like spent 2 weeks writing as many analyzers as possible, learning everything about the API as I could, because I had to give a talk and I didn't want to like let my team down because I couldn't present all their hard work. So it forced me to really learn something really well, and I was able to present it, and I became like a subject matter expert on it from forcing myself to learn it for the talk.
That's a really interesting thing. Buried in that was something very, very important. She didn't want her team to be disrespected because you're representing that. And this is something that I feel a little bit, because I'm kind of a public face of some of the developer groups.
Right.
And, you know, some people think I roll in, I do my 15 minutes and I take off, like, see y'all, bye, you know, Hanselman out. Yep. But they don't understand that I feel a deep and profound sense of honor that I am kind of perched with a cherry on top of all these people's hard work.
Right.
Huge amount, like Visual Studio, think about that. You're presenting on Visual Studio, team of like 2,000 people working on this, and every keystroke, every movement, every feature is a team, is a group.
The feels.
Oh, you got me right in the feels. Yeah. But you know what I'm saying, though? And I think that each of us.
You don't want to disrespect your audience by not being prepared, and you don't want to disrespect your team by not showing all their hard work in the best possible light.
Making them look amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You get the feels there?
I have the feels a little bit.
It's important, though. It's important to think about that kind of stuff. So how do we keep up on this stuff? Like, you work on this all the time. You said that you did Roslyn analyzers for, you know, you steeped yourself in that for that one little demo. How do we not become professional presenters and then, like, lose touch with reality entirely?
Well, I work on Roslyn analyzers now because I, like, learned it. Because I learned it, then I, like, shifted over to working on it.
Really? Because of that presentation? Like, okay, that's your thing now.
Well, because I immersed myself in it and, like, found problems in the experience and things that we could do better. Then it, like, made me really passionate about it, and I wanted to dive in deeper. So now I work on live code analysis in Visual Studio.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Donovan, you do a lot more travel. You seem to be like really speaking a lot right now, but all of your presentations are very real world. How do you balance the fancy person on the road talking for a living versus the real world stuff? Because your stuff is very real world.
Yeah, I wouldn't recommend what I do to anyone. I'm a workaholic, like clinically. And
clinically.
I work like on average about 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. I don't know how to take a vacation. I'm actually working on that. I took 2 days off last year where I didn't touch a computer. So that's how I'm able to do what I do. I wrote Yo VSTS. I wrote Yo TFS on a plane. I wrote Yo Team afterwards. I'm writing a PowerShell module that actually encapsulates the entire API of VSTS and TFS. Because so how do I stay sharp? I just keep doing it. Right? I love technology. I love writing software. I've been a process consultant for 7 years. I'm here at a DevOps workshop in New York. It's just what I do. So I immerse myself in it. Because I write software and I have public-facing websites, I implement DevOps every day of my life as I roll out my own features and my own products. So as much as I speak, I'm speaking also, and I want to go back to what was said earlier. You have to be passionate about what it is you're speaking about. That's what makes it easy. And it is an adrenaline rush. But when I get on stage, I'm like, man, that guy's a great salesman. I'm like, no, really, I'm not. I'm not trying to sell you on this. I'm just sharing with you my passion for how cool I think this is. And you should think this is cool too. And this is why, right? It's freaking awesome stuff. So it's that love for technology, that inability to not work. I mean, and like I said, I honestly am trying to work on that because I think it has impacts on my personal life. So I don't recommend being a workaholic, but you need to find something that you are passionate about that you can go and present on.
Yeah, I think this is really important. I want people to understand that, you know, everyone has different levels of privilege that they bring to the situation, right? Mm-hmm. There are people with kids. There are people who don't have kids. There are people who have hobbies. There are people who have time, people who don't have time. Right. Donovan's making a conscious choice to dedicate an enormous amount of time to his craft.
Right.
Each of us may have varying levels of privilege that we want to bring to that. I have 2 kids. I really want to spend time with them. If I didn't like my kids, I would probably have a lot more time. So there's a balance, right? It's all about what you choose to put your effort into, right?
Yeah.
So I would think we can agree that it's hard to do this. None of this is really our full-time day job.
No.
Very true.
Yeah. You just do this when you have the opportunity to?
Right. Like, basically, I limit it to one talk a month, if or less, essentially, because once you kind of get in the circuit, then people keep wanting you, which is kind of nice. But then you have to realize, like, you have a full-time job that you got to do, and you have, like, feature work you need to do, and you can't let your team down in that respect because they need you to help organize, figure out, talk to customers, figure out what you need to do. So you have to figure out what that balance is of how much are you going to speak, how much are you going to do product work, and things like that. So I try to balance. So if it's, like, a really cool place, like Belgium for Techorama, which I'm going to, that's, like, I'm not going to turn down a trip to Belgium, so I'm going there for sure. But I also get
to see you there. I'm going to Techorama too.
Oh, hey, I'll see you there.
Yeah, so I'll see you there.
Cool.
But it's interesting because I'm a very odd PM because my job almost is to speak. I literally, like I said a moment ago, I left in November 28th. I was on a speaking tour till December 25th. All I did is spoke for an entire month. And I'm going back in May for Techorama to start another month in Europe. I don't come back for June.
But
I'm doing is speaking.
To be clear, let's just be really transparent. That is just you. Like, that's not
that
like
no
that's
problem.
Not a thing people do. That's deeply
right.
Unique.
I'm a very unique PM.
Donovan only.
I'm very unique.
And
in that.
I don't do that. I'm once a month
there.
Too. Yeah.
Oh.
So I speak maybe once a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of different things that I want to make sure, because we only have about 20 minutes left. First, I want to talk about getting started, because we're all talking about jetting off to Bruges. that's one level. But that doesn't mean that everyone has to go from, hey, you're watching on .NET at home right now, to flying off to Belgium.
Right.
They're smaller crowds. And then we should probably talk a little bit about getting paid. Now, we all happen to work for Microsoft, so we don't get paid by conferences to speak. But we could maybe talk a little bit about T&E and things like that at the towards the end.
Sure.
So small groups. I really, really feel strongly about doing small groups first. I don't know if you heard that in Portland, I'm from Portland, a couple of days ago, Louis C.K. was doing a concert and then afterwards went to this local retro arcade and presented new material in front of 16 people.
Wow.
Cool.
Now, after a while, people were walking by, they saw him in the window and they freaked out and he had to leave.
Yeah.
But this happens. Like Seinfeld just rolls into clubs in New York to try out new material.
Yeah.
We don't always do that. I don't know about you, but I don't just go to TechEd, right? I go to the PortlandArea.net user group, right?
Yeah, I've spoken at the Seattle.net meetup. Like there's tons of .NET meetups all over that you can go speak at.
Or TypeScript or JavaScript.
Yeah, or whatever language, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, another thing, an example of places you could speak are community colleges. Like, do you volunteer at your high school, your local grade school? Have you done things like that? I've presented to 37-year-olds on 3D printing.
Oh my gosh.
Have you gone back to school and maybe done, like, just call your professor and say, hey, can I, give a presentation just for a day?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I've gone for recruiting events back to college, but also just for non-recruiting events back to college and given talks about being a PM or learning about compilers or things like mm-hmm. that.
Maria, you've gotten presentations all over New York in universities, haven't you?
Yeah, I actually used to teach at NYU part-time, not being paid, obviously, but I used to teach. And I think talking to students is actually a really great way to kind of practice your presentation skills, especially if you're someone who has a short amount of time and you need to teach and inspire people. Seeing their faces is also a really great way to start practicing. And if you go to any student group, they're always looking for professional developers to come and speak to them. Also, boot camps. Boot camps are always looking for professional developers to come in and tell people about why are you using .NET or why are you using Docker. They want to understand why are you using the technology that you're using? Why is it important? Because these are people who are changing their careers. So I also like speaking to them. And I probably speak to a boot camp or a student group once a week. When I was in DX, when I was a technical evangelist, I spoke about 4 times a week. So I'm kind of done with speaking for a while because I want to kind of ramp up on building more insight into like .NET and how it's built in ASP.NET. So I'm going to step away from speaking at any conferences this year, but you'll see me speaking around like at user groups or with students all the time. But conferences, probably not this year.
She's bringing up a great point because you can just reach out and just say, hey, I'm really excited about Docker. I'm exploring Project Foo. Can I come and talk to your group about that?
Right. Yep. Like even random aside, my mom is a DNA detective, and she thinks what she's doing is really cool. So she just called up the public library and was like, are you interested in me doing a presentation on this? And they're like, yeah, come do it. And so she's like giving a talk in a couple weeks on what she does there. That, so it's just really easy. Like, you don't even have to be a technical person to go do this kind of stuff. Like, anyone can go give talks to the community.
And all your talks don't have to be about technology. I spoke at a rite of passage. It was for minority children who are graduating and getting ready to go into college. And they wanted someone that could inspire them to whatever you dream you can be. And they asked me just to come and speak to them about what I've done and where I am in my career, and had nothing to do with technology, but just to inspire them, to make them look like, hey, someone that looks like you and is like you and lived your life, you can go anywhere you want. So when I'm speaking in public, it's not always about technology even anymore.
Donovan, do you find that speaking about other things is very beneficial? Because I find myself speaking to people about like books and women's rights. So right now I'm going around talking to kids about the march by Congressman John Lewis. And I'm like, this is a book you should read, and this is how you can tell stories in different ways. I always think that that's a really great way to actually improve your public speaking skills as well, because you learn how people understand things, and you tend to stop saying all this technical jargon that people might not quite understand. Right. And one thing that I've been given like points on is that I don't come off intimidating, which is a plus, right?
Sure.
Because I kind of come down and say, this is what you need to know. I'm not going to bring in like, remember .NET back in 2005? I was like, no, I don't.
that was actually something important that Maria reminded me about was, I wrote a blog post about this, the difference between teaching from the metal up, the metal, like the hardware metal mm-hmm. up, which is how I learned. Like, let's talk about IL. You want to learn C#? Let's talk about IL, right? Let's talk about the jitter versus from the glass, the monitor glass right. back. You know, she's like, well, I want to see Chrome and hit F12. You know what I mean? Show me Postman. That's how I want to learn. Mm-hmm. I'm like, no. You want to learn this way.
Right.
To understanding how other people learn and mm-hmm. talking to them about, like you said, non-technical things is a way of getting out of the bubble. I present on diabetes all the time just because mm-hmm. I want to know what real people are doing.
Right. If you're asking me,
I think speaking on any topic publicly is just practice, right? And just like anything else, the more you do it, the more comfortable you get, the better you you start to present. So for me, it's about building up those muscle memories so that my instincts are going to protect me. Should something catastrophic happen during a demo, I feel comfortable now. As Scott's already identified, one of my tricks is if it fails, chances are I've already seen it fail. Because I've run this so many times, and I'm going to make a joke about it. I'm going to use that as a teaching moment of, you know why this failed? Let's go look at the diagnostic tools and see if we can determine why this actually failed. And that will completely pivot my demo onto I'm going to teach you how cool our diagnostic tools are because my demo didn't go the way I wanted it to, but I don't freeze and like, oh, okay, let's just go overboard. And you can actually see this live when my last presentation in Norway went south as fast as it possibly could go. This demo was just cratering, and it was one of the most fun demos I'd ever done. Like, the crowd is into it, we're having fun going back and forth, and I ended up saving it, but it's because I've done it so often. If that was my first presentation and my demo didn't work, it would have just been like, come on, I would have been a deer in headlights in the world.
I know a lot of people at like .NET open source conferences do the lightning talk. So a lot of conferences now have like a hour or half hour long period where you can do like a 2-minute lightning talk. So that's like a really cheap and like very less scary. Like a 2 minutes.
Low stress.
Yeah, it's low stress. Like if you mess up, it was 2 minutes. You didn't really waste a large chunk of anyone's time. Like, and it's just 2 minutes. You'll probably forget about it later that night. So it'll be fine. And so Lightning Talks, I know a lot of people use that to talk about their open source project or what they've been working on or some cool thing that they learned or a cool API. And so that's like also a good way to just get started.
What do you think
How many of you watch your presentations again?
That was my next question. Who is filming?
Yes, I watch all of them.
Who's filming your presentations and looking at yourself? This is really, really horrible, but you have to do it.
I watch the first 10 minutes and then I turn off.
Right. You want to have a sense of how much space you occupy. Mm-hmm. You want to understand how you move, what you say, and you need to really be self-critical. Not beating yourself up, but you need to know what your affectations are.
I honestly make my mom watch the whole thing and have her relay back to me what I did wrong, and then I like try to improve upon it next time.
When you get to kind of like, you know, I don't know, mid-level, then you can really start exploring like theater stuff, right? You know about this stuff. Like, if I may, an example that I always like to get that I got from Billy Hollis, who's a professional presenter, was if you move, people look at you.
Right.
So if you're moving away towards the edge of the stage while there's something on the screen, people tend to follow you. But if you turn 90 degrees and then you look at the screen, they will look at the screen.
Right.
So if you can have multiple threads running in your head, you can control their eyes without them realizing that they're being controlled. And the only way you can learn techniques like that is by watching yourself.
Yep.
Yeah.
So we're doing things like that, being aware, like, what do you look like when you turn here? You know, does this make my butt look big? You know, how should I present myself on stage? I used to do this a lot, you know, and it's just like, well, like, that's not really good.
I learned that I do this a lot with my hands.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, that's so annoying to watch.
Did you stop doing it?
I try.
That's good. It's about being
self-critical. I try to hold the podium instead and then just gesture grandly when I need to.
Hello.
Exactly.
Welcome to Roslyn. Now, has anyone who spoke before they came to work at Microsoft? And if you did you get T&E, travel and expenses? Did you fly yourself to the conference, or did they pay for you? Maria?
No, I spoke when I was a student in school, and it was all covered by the school.
Okay, so you got T&E, as we say.
Yeah, T&E, as you'd say.
Travel
it was
expenses.
A hotel room and a meal for me for Subway, so I can't eat Subway ever again.
Hey now, I love Subway. Don't disrespect Subway.
More than Chipotle?
No, I like Chipotle better than Subway. That's a valid point.
Oh, Qdoba all the way.
So we can't get paid cash when we are, because we're, as Microsoft employees, we're presenting about Microsoft technology. If we were to present on a thing that was not Microsoft related, like if you presented on DNA evidence or whatever, you'd take a day off of work. And you could potentially be paid as that, because it would be moonlighting. You see what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
Because you're not talking about your job. You're just taking a day off to go and do that.
Right.
A lot of the questions that come up is this a thing that you make lots of money on? Is this something that people should? People want to know these things.
I never thought about making money off speaking.
When I first, it's hard, and it doesn't really exist unless you become a professional speaker.
It's like an inspirational speaker
or whatever. Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. But in the tech world, there's a couple of different levels, and we're going to look at ways in the .NET community to try to solve this. There was a group called INETA, the International .NET Association, that doesn't exist anymore, and they used to just pay for Subway and a coach ticket, you know, to go and bring that to a user group. We'll try to figure out some way to make something like that happen again. But if you're going to like a code camp, you know, it would be nice if they helped you get there, if they put you up in a room for a night.
Right.
But if you're going to give a talk for an hour, don't expect a week of hotels. Mm-hmm. But don't be afraid to ask a conference. You say, look, I'd love to come and speak to your place, but would you please cover my hotel, or would you please give me a ticket up to $100 and work with them. Don't be afraid to ask for your worth. And then if it's a bigger conference, if it's a conference that's charging money, like if they're charging $1,000, $2,000, unless the exposure is really, really important to you, then you know you should ask for what they call an honorarium.
Right.
You know, some amount of money to go and give your talk. But you have to be a known quantity. So you have to find that.
You have to like build your resume of speaking.
Right.
Yeah.
I did a lot of open mics before I got paid anything. And even then, it was still $15 and pizza.
Yeah. I know something that I want to learn from you is everyone is always laughing before you even start your talks. Like, you always have, like, weird YouTubes that you play beforehand. It's probably because now I know that you do, like, stand-up comedy. But, like, I'm not a comedian, and so I always, I guess my first 2 minutes are always the most awkward minutes of my entire talk because I have to, like, warm up the audience. And sometimes I say howdy, and people are like, oh, God, and things like that. And so that's something I want to learn from you is how do I warm up the audience beforehand when I'm not obviously as good at internet cat memes as you.
Yeah, so this will be a good place to end as we'll go over each person.
Sure.
I think that I have seen people try to take the way that I do stuff and they copy it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work because it's not them, it was me, right?
Right.
It doesn't mean that I'm the one that plays YouTube videos. It's just I've got my warm-up thing, right?
Right.
I have a good friend, Lovey, L-U-V-V-I-E, and she's a very, very skilled writer, New York Times bestselling author. Someone wrote an article in another magazine in her style.
Interesting.
Like, and it was like, is this an homage, or did you just straight rip off all of the ways that she spins words? You know what I mean?
Right.
And at some point, it goes from being, a cute homage to being completely inauthentic.
Right.
So, I understand that. But what I'm saying is that you need to find that thing.
Right.
And
like, that's what I'm working on
at
now.
At Connect, you're finding it. I saw you at Connect because you're finding this enthusiasm for like, this is so cool. Watch this.
Compilers are awesome.
Compilers are
awesome.
Didn't
you know?
Right. You know, Donovan brings a sense of empowerment to his talks where it's like, you know, if you do this, watch what I can do. Now go get out of here and go and do this yourself.
Right.
That's that sense of like, ooh, you know, I feel more powerful now that I've seen a Donovan talk.
Right.
So we need to find those things. So what do you think the gifts are that you bring to presenting?
I think because I smile a lot and I actually am super interested in what I'm saying, that I'm able to make what a lot of people think is an inaccessible or boring topic at least understandable. And so I think that's what I bring right now.
Do you agree that that's your gift, Donovan, or what do you think is your gift that you bring to conferences and presentations?
Passion is the word that I think people use to describe me 9 times out of 10. It's like, man, that guy is passionate, or man, that guy loves his job, right? It's just, and it is. I when I'm backstage, I'm pacing. I can't wait to explode on you with all this coolness that we have. And I just love this stuff. And that's what happens to me. We said it was an adrenaline rush earlier, and it is. When you were talking about Scott Guthrie, when Scott Guthrie says your name, when he's calling you out on stage in front of, I think we had at Ignite, it was like 12,000 people are sitting in there, and Scott asks you out there, that honor that you feel that this guy trusts me to represent our company and say these words in front of these people, I take that extremely, extremely seriously, to where I've actually had an emotional crash behind stage after like a huge, I think it was Build. I literally had to go be by myself after Build. That was like the most powerful 9 minutes of my life. I was like, get away from me because I'm going to start crying.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. People don't see that stuff. People don't see that stuff.
They don't. And they don't see that 9 minutes that you saw me on stage was weeks and weeks of preparation. The demo had 3 or 4 guys working on it. I am rehearsing for weeks and weeks for 9 minutes, right? And then when it's over, that night, you're just like, it was awesome, but your body's just like, oh, thank God that's over.
Yeah.
And then next thing, I'm like, when's the next time?
Yeah. Maria, what is the gift that you bring when you present?
I take the time to truly understand my audience. And I think whenever I go in front of to speak to people, I've taken the time to understand what they need and what they expect from me, because you have taken the time out of your day to trust me. I need to give you trust back. So I remember when I think one of my most successful presentations was internal and no one has ever seen it. Maybe, I think Donovan, you might have seen it. It was at a DX conference,
yeah,
offsite. And I talked about the way we were talking to students and why that was wrong. And I had taken an entire year, the first year of my job, understanding how we need to appeal to the student developer. And now that was taken as a standard for DX of like, this is how we talk to students. Because actually taking the time to understand people is important. Even when I do my videos, like especially doing the .NET videos, that was a huge transition for me because I understood that I was talking to two different types of audiences. I was trying to appeal to people who had never seen it, but I also needed to appeal to people who had been using it for such a long time. So taking that time is important. And it even goes into my decks. Like my decks are pretty awesome. Not as cool as Stacey's. Because Casey's decks are ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They are hand-drawn. But I actually do take time, even in that, to actually appeal to my audience as well.
And she has an awesome accent, which makes her super pleasant to listen to.
I know. I like my Twitter handle is Lady Nagaga. So I already set the sound of, like, I'm a lady.
And then,
yeah, so that catches people immediately. A number of times people thought I'm Lady Gaga, and I'm like, oh, okay.
So Kendra, as you kind of embark on your speaking experience, what do you think the gift that you're going to bring is?
Oh gosh, I can't wait to find out.
Humor.
Probably some humor, yeah, and maybe a little bit laid backness, hopefully. I don't know.
That's
It'll
good.
Be cool.
Well, that's great. I hope that this provided you some value and that gave you a little bit of inspiration to go and speak. A couple of resources you might check out, a little bit of an advertisement to take a look at speakinghacks.com. I've got a thing I did for Pluralsight with Rob Connery called The Art of Speaking that you can see. If you have a Pluralsight presentation, you can check that out. And if you're interested in more being a social developer, take a look at getinvolvedintech.com. It's a 2-hour documentary film that I did with Rob Connery that's also free. You don't need a Pluralsight subscription to see it. It talks about setting up your Twitter, your GitHub, how to be social, how to pick an avatar, how to be anonymous, how not to be anonymous, how to be out there and make yourself known. And we just want to thank you so much for spending the last hour with us here on On.net. Big applause for our panel.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.